you know, they were very active, and they were always at the meetings opposing this and that, and of course we were told, of course the communists are always doing that to disrupt them. So, but I remember the name.
They acted as a group?
Well, it's not as a group, but they knew them as a group. Mm-hmm. They, the leaders of the union knew more about it, and I wasn't too involved in it, so it never bothered me. I was busy organizing and talking to the people when they come into the union.
So you in no way ever saw them as troublemakers or as making things more difficult for you?
Well, you know, this is crazy, I guess. But do you know, if it wasn't for them, I mean, they kind of kept us, you know, we had to be on our toes, because if you don't do the right thing, they were right there to tell us about it. So they, I think they, instead of, first the whole union had gone communist, I don't know what would have happened, but I know that this, lots of times I said, Diet, I wish we had a few more communists here, so they, you know, start opposing and hollering, and then they'll, because if everybody agrees to everything is said, it isn't right either, you know, because people don't care and they don't understand. So they, whatever the boss would propose, I didn't call him boss, you know, the manager or somebody in the union. So they all accept, they don't ask questions. And I didn't know, that was a good idea, somebody would, one time I was working in a shop. Remember I told you that I'm, are you already? Anyway, my husband didn't want me to work for the union because he thought it was too much time they were taking. So I went to work for a little while. I had a very bad case of pleurisy. And I had worked in an open shop for a while after I had quit working for the union. And I went to work in a union shop, and they paid me by the hour. So I didn't have to hurry up very much. I just worked a little bit. So I went to the union, and I was behind in my dues, and of course they had new people in there, they didn't know me, so they told the boss to let me go because my dues were behind. And my God, it was something, I just almost felt bad when I heard this, so I went to the union like crazy, and I said, at the membership meeting, and I said, what's the big idea to go into the employee and telling him to take me off the job because my dues are behind. I said, I've been paying dues for years and I've been working for the union. I have only been working there 2 months. So, they were very sorry, and they already, business agent came out and took me out for coffee and everything, you know. But at the same time, there was a bunch of communists. I don't even remember what they were arguing about, but they were fighting like crazy. And of course, I happened to be there at the same time, and I came up with my objection. He told me, are you with that group? And I said, heck no, because I don't have anything to do with them. I said, but how can you tell the boss to take me off the job? I said, I wanted a rest, which is the truth. You know, when you work on time work, of course, it wasn't fair either, but it is the truth. I figured I'm getting paid by the hour, so why kill myself? And I only worked there for a little while, then I went back to work again for the union, because this was off and on most of the time. So this reminded me when you said about the policy, you know.
When there would be a lot of commotion at the meetings and questioning, was this after, because for a while there was a separate group called the Needle Trades Industrial Union during the General
Strike. Yeah, well, see, we almost, I remember at the beginning I told you that I almost joined them because I didn't know the difference. I didn't know there was the Needle Trades and that they were with the communists. I had no idea. The only thing is when we were going to the big meeting, this Bill Buzik was the general organizer, and he was telling us to go this way. You know, we were right on Main, where the street meets Main and Spring, I think, you know, right on Night. And so the Needle Trades Union was someplace up on North Main or somewhere there, or Spring, I don't know where. And we were going to Los Angeles Street to another meeting. And Bill Buzik was at the corner. They're telling us to go this way. And there was a Mexican woman by the name of Virginia Flores. And she was telling them to go to the other place. So I followed Bill Buzik. So I said, otherwise, God knows how that would have happened. But I don't think I would have stayed with them anyway. Because they were mostly to disrupt, I think. But in a way, they helped. In a funny way, you know. They helped because they kept us. The only thing that now I wish they had done more. See, we could have organized much more, I think, during Roosevelt's time than we did when the war started. And for some reason, of course, I can't tell you the reason. The only thing I know is that we could have organized more and we didn't.
Well, why? Do you have any ideas at all why?
I guess once you have a job, and we had a vice president, Mr. Louis Levy, and he was sick. He had heart trouble. And I don't know what was the reason. Of course, I used to hear them say, oh, New York doesn't want Los Angeles organized, which I think is crazy, because why would they spend so much money to organize Los Angeles if they don't want it organized? So I didn't believe that. But this was also talk that, you know, these people spread out.
What was Rose to go to certain things that
she didn't like him.
That he was the problem. Do you think that was the problem?
I don't know. This was between them. See, it was Rose to Sop and Louis Levy didn't like each other. But why, I don't know. But she always blamed him and he blamed her and I don't know.
But do you think that those kinds of conflicts had an effect on the work of
I think so. You know, when the big leaders don't agree and then one is fighting the other one, like for instance, now I'm not sure, but it seems to me, I think that Ross Pessoa put Sue Adams in charge of the, no, she made her an organizer. Sue Adams was the manager of a cotton workers union later. And Levy took her off, fired her right in front of everybody. I mean, we were having a staff meeting, and he fired her. And I still, to this day, don't know exactly what was the reason, you know, because it was a different local, and I wasn't supposed to ask any questions. And I thought Levy was swell. For me, he was good. And see, when I have a trust in somebody, they couldn't tell me different. I mean, I just trusted him. I thought he was all right, and I couldn't see why they didn't like him. But they really didn't like him.
Was there any talk as to why, or was it just jealousy?
No, they said that he was no good and that he wasn't doing anything, and that's all. But he's the one that helped me a lot. So maybe that's one of the reasons that I couldn't see it. Because, I think I told you when I became a business agent, before I accepted the job, I went to see him because I figured, well, gee, I can't do that kind of work. And after all, I'm just an organizer. What do I know about selling prices and about things, you know, like making a contract or having complaints and all this? So I figured, well, I'd be an organizer, and with time, maybe I'll learn. But when I was offered the job as business agent, also the reason the manager, this Eggerson, put me in as a business agent because he wants to stop me from running against his girlfriend crazy as a president of the local, which I had no intentions. I had no intentions, but somebody came and told him that I wanted to be president of the local. So he offers me a job as business agent. And I took it after I talked to Lydia. Lydia says, go ahead and take it. And I said, well, what am I going to do? I get stuck. And he says, don't worry, you come to me and I'll help you. Which he did. Mm-hmm. He helped me an awful lot. So I couldn't say anything against him.
Well, were you one of the few people who supported him, or were there others also?
Oh, yeah, he had a group that supported him. Salvos, you know, everybody has a little group that helps him. And the college didn't like him. The clockmakers didn't like him. But then it seems that it happens with all the vice presidents, because when somebody else came later, Samuel Otto, one group didn't like him, the other did. So, I don't know, I guess he doesn't know what some of them want, and then the others, I personally didn't like him very much. I mean, I like Livy, for instance. And he was in our office, because the clockmakers didn't want him over there.
And he was the general manager for the joint board?
No, he was the vice president of the union. And then he was in charge of all the locals, like the sportswear and the dresses and the clothes. And then the sports and the cotton workers got together and made one local, which was Local 266. And Local 4, then later on they had Local 266, they call it the Joint Council. And then they had Local 266, 482, for 96 came later. That was the knit goods and the belt makers, and, you know, the different kind of crafts. The colors were with the clockmakers, part of them, and the ones that worked in sport shops and sportswear, they were with us. But still, they paid their dues over there at the clockmakers.
But let's start with when Local 266 was formed, because you started as an organizer in 96.
Yes.
And
then they had a general strike. Only, like I told you before, I can't remember the year.
Mm-hmm.
I must have been in 41, I think, but I'm not sure. Either at the beginning of 41 or at the end of 40 or something like that.
Is this the strike that was started?
That was the last, the last strike she was in. And then they formed Local 266 and they separated. The dressmaker stayed on 8th Street and we moved about across the room. And we stayed a long time.
Well, how did you get tied up with them in the strike?
They sent me all over. And when the time came to divide which is going to be where, somehow I ended up in 266, which I don't know to this day how I got there. They just told me you're going to work with Local 266. I said, all right.
Oh, that's all. Now, can you tell me more about the strike and organizing for the strike? This was a strike that was both in sportswear and dressing.
Yeah.
Now, how was the organization?
Well, see, when we organized it together, then if it's a dress shop, then you give it to Local 96. And if it's a sportswear shop, then you give it to Local 266 after the locals were separated. Now, they also have different kind of agreement. The dressmakers had one kind of agreement. The sportswear had another kind. The dressmaker's agreement was better than the sportswear, because they had more things, like, for instance, they had an hour for lunch, their minimum wages were higher, the dresses, of course, were much more expensive. And in the sportswear, it was the lower crafts, so they worked more hours. I think it started with 37 hours and a half. The dressmakers had 35 hours. Then, of course, the contract says after each contract expires, you keep cutting the hours and keep adding holidays and things. So, I can't tell you too much about dressmakers from then on, because I don't think they did too much organizing.
Mm.
Either they didn't have organizers or whether they didn't, I don't know what to do.
The strike was a strike for both of them?
Yeah, for all of them, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Who did you work with during the strike? With the dressmakers, or were you already?
We were all together. No, the sports local was formed after.
Mm-hmm.
We were all together at that time.
Because in Rose Pagoda's account, she talks about that she was handling the sportswear, preparing for the strike, and that Jenny Matius was handling the dresses.
Uh-huh, yes.
What was your relationship to each of them?
With Jenny, I was very friendly. I liked her very much. Like I told you, Rose Pagoda, it was a funny thing, because poor thing, she's dead. She never knew it, I don't think. I didn't like her, and the only reason, like I told you before, because I didn't know she was deaf. And I talked to her, and at the wrong time she'd say yes or all right, or she didn't hear, and I'd say, well, I'm talking to the wall, you know. And Jenny Matthews was very nice, and I was very friendly with her, and she always was giving me advice and teaching me things, and which I didn't know, so I liked her. Even to this day, I liked her. By the way, later on when I found out Rose Pagoda was deaf, I mean, it wasn't a real dislike. I wasn't too close to her, you know. But each one had their own group.
So for the organizing for the 41 strike, so which one did you work with?
Well, I worked with both, but I ended up with the sportswear. And I stayed with the sportswear. Then I even had to transfer locals. I transferred from Local 96 to Local 266.
Now, when you were in 96, after... You were on the executive board, and then when you became an organizer, you had to go off the executive board?
When I became a full-paid officer, then I got off the executive board. But while I was working like now they call them colonizers, so in those days they just called us organizers. While I was working in the shops and helping the union, I was on the executive board. As soon as I became a full-time employee of the union, then they took me off the executive board.
Mm.
And we had a Spanish-speaking branch, but we didn't have an executive board. And I was in charge of that, and which also, now that I see it, some of them didn't like it. Some of the Mexicans didn't like it. Because they said, well, how come somebody that is not a Mexican is in charge? Well, I didn't see it that way. To me, I never did bother about nationalities. I don't care whether it's Negroes or Chinese or Mexicans or whatever they were. To me, they were just workers. And if I understood them, fine. If I did, well, that's so. So
they resented you being in charge?
Some of them did, yeah. And especially when I was in Local 96, and I was working as an organizer, there was a woman by the name of Concha Andrews.
Mm-hmm.
She got married later, and I don't know, Fisher, I think was her name, left because she married again. Now, that woman couldn't stand me. And so one day I asked her, because everything I did, she was always finding fault. And I asked her, well, Concha, what did I do to you? She told me I have the elephant's feet and because my feet used to swell up a lot. So I asked her, why you don't like me? And she said, because, she said, what business have you got to be the leader of the Mexicans? So I said, well, gee whiz, I said, what difference does it make? I said, I'm not the leader of the Mexicans, I'm just the leader of the Spanish-speaking people. And she tried to even get the people out of the union to form a separate group. Well, not just because of me, but also because they wanted a Spanish-speaking local. And this, they had been promised, but I wasn't present, so I don't know exactly, but they had been promised at the beginning they would have a Spanish-speaking local. And that's why the Mexicans were so active, because they were very active.
Mm-hmm.
But later on, I guess they figured, well, just promises, you know, mm-hmm. and they kind of, some of them cooled off. Some of them, of course, once you get very active, nothing stops you. I mean, it doesn't matter whether they like it or not, you keep on.
So in other words, it wasn't a separate local, but the Spanish-speaking group would meet separately?
Yes, and they had Spanish-speaking. Everything we did was in Spanish,
mm-hmm.
and of course I did most of the talking and I did the translating. And then we had a very active members that spoke English too, and
would they meet before the meeting of the whole 96?
No, we'd have a separate date.
Uh-huh.
Separate date.
But then how would what happened in their meeting have any influence on the local?
We had to go and tell them what they wanted. And then, but it didn't last too long, because when I went to the sports fair, we didn't have, besides we had had a Mexican organizer before, which his name was Rafael Trujillo. I don't know if anybody ever mentioned, he used to be a radio announcer, and he was the darnest crook you ever saw in your life. Of course, I didn't see it at the time, but I found out later. This guy I never told you about.
And he's the one that preceded you, in other words?
Yes. And he got fired, and I got put in his place today. And his friends, that's one of the reasons this Concha also hated me, and there was another woman that was going to even beat me up. Because how come they fired Trujillo and they put me in his place? And he was a very smart man. And he could speak, and I myself used to call him the Golden Beak. Excuse me.
Wait a minute. Let her out.
Out or whatever she is, yeah.
About that.
Yeah. Well,
he was the very first Spanish-speaking
Person? He was a radio announcer,
mm-hmm.
and he was recommended. And I was one of the group that recommended him, because he really spoke real nice. I mean, his language, he used to write books, and he used to write poems and things like that.
But had he ever worked in a shop?
No, he never worked in a shop. He never worked in a union, and he didn't even know what unions were, but he only knew how to talk to people. And we were all a bunch of women crazy, so he even formed a separate group on the outside of the union to form a Mexican club, see? And I helped him an awful lot and learned from him quite a bit, even not about union. I think he learned from me, but I learned how to talk and how different, because I used to speak over the radio in Spanish through his radio station. But you know what he did? He had a bunch of women, and he made an executive board outside of the union.
And a club, in other
words? Club, yeah, Mexican club. I forgot what they call it. La Casa del Mexicano, I think the House of the Mexican, I think it's called. And he was going to have this group to help the Mexican people on the outside of the union. And so
were they all women who worked in the shop?
Not all. I mean, some from shops and some from other places. And of course, he knew, you know, they can see somebody that's dumb enough to work their head off. So he put me on the executive board of his executive board, and I was even a Mexican. So he said that he was going to give the union half an hour free time so we could speak over the radio. So the union, of course, agreed, or maybe they paid him something very little. But he had us, the executive board members, and of course being allowed from the union, and most of us, I think, well, I would say three-quarters of the executive board was garment worker. And of course, he said that if we would go and sell coffee for him, union to restaurants order, and then we would get this free time at the union. And you should see me trying to kill myself, trying to sell coffee, and went to restaurants and all kinds of places, so he would give us the time for the union, so we could take over the radio. And so I spoke over the radio for quite a while.
Now, this whole time he was an organizer for the union?
So finally, we had a raffle. And of course, we had a separate treasury, like a petty cash or something, but we used to have raffles and things. And he signed the checks. And we needed some money. And he was sick at home. I don't know what to say. I guess he had pneumonia or something. And we needed some money, so they sent me over to see him. And he signed the check. And somehow the union got wind of it. I didn't tell them because I figured, well, this is something outside of the union. It has nothing to do with the union. And it was helping the union. This they knew that, you know, I was doing all this stuff to help the union. So I would get called in the office one day by Lutsky was the name of the manager. So he says to me, Anita, he says, what if I hear that you're almost killing yourself working for Trujillo selling coffee for him? So I said, well, yeah, I am. I said, because he's giving us the time on the radio. And Anita, he says, don't you understand? He says, he's using all of you? And I said, well, no, I didn't realize it. But after that, I thought, oh, gee whiz, did he take us? So I went to a meeting, and then he also... First he was going to have this house for the Mexicans. Then he wanted us, he also made us put money in the bank, each one of us, in our own name, make a deposit. We were so poor, and when you put $2 in the bank, it was like a $200 bill now. So I had about $20 in the bank that I had opened an account, and some of them had a 500 pence. And one night he gets up, and he says he decided that instead of having this house for the Mexicans, he was going to open a newspaper with that money. And I got up, and I don't know why, but I guess I always do crazy things. So I got up, and right in the middle, imagine there was about 500 people. And I says, well, I don't go along with that idea. And he looked at me and says, what do you mean? And I says, well, this money that we put in the bank was supposed to be for to open some house for the Mexicans, like a club or something, you know, clubhouse. And I said, now you want a new fee? He was a newspaperman also, see. And I said, now you want a newspaper? I said, no, my mind doesn't go there. Well, do you know, there was the whole group, two of us, and both of us were on the executive board. And we both said no. And the rest of them, I thought they were going to lynch us. Really, that meant. What do you mean? He's trying to do the best he can for us. And I said, I don't care. He said it was going to be for the club, and now he wants a newspaper. So then I found out, when I left the meeting that night, a friend of mine came over. She was also on the executive board. She's now in Tijuana. Her name is Maria Rodriguez. She had a sister, Rosario Flores. They were very active in the Spanish group in the union and also in this club of this city. So one of them came over and she says, Anita, you know, they intend to expel you from the executive board at the next meeting. So I said, well, they won't have a chance because I never went back. Never had a chance to expel me. The meantime, when Lutsky called me in and he asked me, so I told him the whole story. And he says, well, you fool. He says, you're killing yourself and you're helping somebody else, and he's using the union for his own benefit. So what happened is that he got fired.
Had he actually been doing any organizing or not?
Well, I imagine he did because he spoke on the radio and he had a voice. You know, some people are good talkers. So even if he didn't know anything about the government industry, but he told them, and people did. Well, we had a big following at the time, and this splitting up had nothing to do with the union, but the club finally went under later. I don't know what happened because I never went back. But he got fired, and that's how I was put in. as an organizer full-time. I mean, one of the reasons, because I was his helper.
Mm-hmm.
I was working with him, and I was getting $20 a week wages, and he was getting 60, and which in those days, even $60 was quite a bit of money. So when he got fired, I stayed in his place. And
oh, so in other words, you were his assistant in organizing.
Yeah, at the beginning.
Uh-huh.
I had forgotten about it. I don't know. It's funny how it just came up to this.
I wanted to clarify, because you had mentioned before that there had been a Spanish-speaking organizer,
yeah,
and that he was fired, but it wasn't clear to me how.
Oh, well, I guess I didn't explain, or maybe I didn't think about it at the time.
Now, were you then the first woman organizer,
yeah,
or the first Spanish-speaking woman organizer?
I would say the first Spanish-speaking, because they had they had a girl by the name of Mary. When we came in together, Mary Donovan and Sue Adams came a little later. And I think I was the first woman. First woman and first Spanish-speaking. Because right after that, they got this Mary Donovan, which later on she married one of the colors, and he became a business agent of the colors, Tankerson. So she married this Abe Tankerson, and she got off the industry. I don't know if she stayed home or went to work or something else. So she got off, and Sue Adams, like I told you, she was, this was way later.
Mm-hmm. That was in the 40s.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So in 1934, when you started as an organizer, you were the first member.
I was the first. Then they had a woman in the office, but she was not an organizer. She was an office girl. Her name is Lola Patino. She worked in the office. And after that, they had another one, Francis, I forgot his last name. She was shorty thing. She was thick pie. She didn't work very long because she was getting married and her husband didn't want her to have anything to do with the union because it was taking too much of her time.
Well, when you came in, how did they react to you in the office, since you were the first woman coming in there as an organizer?
Well, I don't know. They treated me like I was a queen. That's all I know. And I didn't speak very good English, and to this day, sometimes I'm surprised how I got the job, because I had an awful time. You know, my English was very bad. See, I had learned myself, and then I told you they sent me to Berkeley to school. Well, my English wasn't very good, but of course, I guess I learned something. It took years, I imagine, to.
Did you take other night classes in English?
Oh, yeah, I was going into school all the time, at night. Most of my time was spent going to school.
Primarily to learn English?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I had learned English, even in South America, I had gone to school where they taught me a little English. But I was exactly like the book. You know how you pronounce it one way, you write it different way. Where I pronounced it the way it was written, and like I would do it in Spanish. So it didn't sound the same. So it took me some time to get my corrected and my accent. I don't think I ever lost the accent. But and then I used to think in Spanish. Now when I'd be speaking English, I think in Spanish, so I talk backwards, because some words in Spanish, you say it backwards, and or they sounded to them anyway backwards. But I
did the union itself hold any leadership classes? A whole bunch of organizers started about the same time.
Yeah, quite a few of us used to go to classes, yes. Those are very interested.
And they were held by the union itself?
Yeah. We had either the music or those are very interested. For instance, I was so interested that every word they said, I just watched. And the one person that I wanted to be like, and it was Jenny Metler. I thought she was best, the way she talked. And she was about this size, And boy, when she talked, I think she was a giant. And I always just said, gee, if I only could speak like her.
Well, how much time did she spend?
Not too much, but even one speech. I used to go to San Francisco and visit her and all that. And she liked me very much, too. She didn't spend too much time. I don't know how long, because strikes don't last that long. But she'd go back and forth because she was manager of San Francisco Union, too. And she went to college when she was an older woman. So, I don't say older, but after she was married. And I always admired her a lot. But whether she and Rose Quesota and Levy, they got into an argument or what caused it, I don't know. I know Jenny Matthews became a vice president because first she was a manager, then she became a vice president of the union after Rose Quesota.
No, Rose Quesota was the first one.
Yeah, that I know, yes.
Was there a lot of talk about that?
I don't remember. I think she was already a vice president. No, I don't know. Can't remember very much. Whether she was already a vice president when she came here or she became one later. But I know one thing, she didn't last as a vice president very long for some reason. I don't know either. I know she wrote the book later and she went back into the shops, and this was very funny to me, you know, that for being a vice president of the union to go back to work in the shops as a garment worker. This I never did know why. So when Jenny stayed there as a vice president for many years in San Francisco, she'd come around once in a while whenever we needed her, she'd come. And she was a good speaker. How she conducted her union was in San Francisco, I don't know, because I never worked there. Once they wanted to take me to San Francisco, but see, I couldn't leave. I was in love.
And this is before you were married? While you were still, there's some questions I wanted to go over while you were still an organizer, before you became the business agent. At first, with Local 96, at the time 96 was formed, there had already been a cutters union.
There was a clockmakers union, yeah.
Now, as an organizer for the dressmakers, did you have any connection at all?
We were all together. We organized everything. Especially me. I organize even the waitresses, even if they didn't have to go into a union. Then I will call up some other union. Because my idea was everybody should be organized. We tried to organize the blue-collar workers, they call, and we couldn't. And that had nothing to do with my union. But if I went to a restaurant to eat, and I'll start talking to the waitress, and I start telling them they should join the union. If I went to the May company, I tell them why don't they join the union. Things like that, which I wasn't told to do. Somehow I just felt like doing it. I figured everybody should belong to a union.
What did you think would come of it then?
I figured everybody's union, like San Francisco, things would be better because, see, the blue-collar workers were very low paid. The waitresses had a very low pay, and the hours were awful. And I figured we already have our union, and we already got our 35 hours. And I figured if everybody becomes union, it's really going to be good.
Did you see it as a way to make other changes, or was it primarily in terms of wages? To
me, it was just to better the conditions of the workers, so they would treat it better. I mean, I didn't think about the future, you know. I just thought now we should have things better. Why should we be like slaves?
Mm-hmm.
And
so you didn't tie it to some of the anarchist ideas you thought you had?
The only thing I have from him is that since I was a little girl, he always thought that it's good to have a union, is good. But I didn't know it. Later on, now for instance, Levy, I heard he had been an anarchist when he was young. But I never had a chance to talk to him about it. And the only thing I knew, I read one book one time, and that's all I knew.
So the idea of the unions was primarily for people to organize
to better their conditions. That's fine. I don't think I even thought of anything like that.
So when you were in 96 then, what was your relationship like to say, clockmakers and to the other locals? Did you work with the organizers?
We were all working together. See, we didn't care what it was. Let's say it was a cloak shop. I helped organize the cloak shop, they got it. If there was a dress shop, I helped, we got it. Or if it was a sportswear shop, we got it. And don't matter who. I mean, we helped each other, everybody.
Mm-hmm.
It was pretty nice. It was much better than it was in the later years. Mm-hmm. I mean, we were all together at the end. No, this is cloaks. You don't have any business here. And it's, for instance, we had a shop on Strike, Rosemary. No, it was a very, very exclusive dress shop. And they had a cloak shop also. And to this day, I can't understand it because the cloaks were already organized. I mean, we have the majority, but I can't remember the name. Marie, Rosemary, Olga, something like that, after that. Anyway, we had the clockmakers, but we couldn't get the dressmakers. And everybody kept asking, we'll sign up the clockmakers, we'll get the dressmakers later. And the vice president said no, and so we lost the whole thing. We lost the dresses and we lost the clocks, and this is the thing that I didn't understand and I couldn't see. But of course, I wasn't the vice president, so I had nothing to say. But I, among ourselves, you know, we would talk and say, well, why can't we do that? And many times we lost the shop. Not even the last one, where the last big strike, I was 6 years ago, just before I got sick. Also, we had a shop. Again, I'm jumping from one decade to another. We had a shop called Chicklinger, one in Los Angeles and one in Redondo Beach. This was the last strike the very bad one we had. So we had where we could sign up some of the preferential shop, like they call it. And the workers were willing. Some of them to join the union, the others maybe we'll get them later. And the vice president said no and no, but it wasn't Otto or anything, it was another one that came in here. His name was Sims. That was the last vice president we have here after Otto, because Otto was forced to retire, because he didn't want to retire. He was way over his 70s. But they retired him at one of the conventions, and then this Sims came over, and he absolutely, now whether they all worked that way or was individual, I don't know. But anyway, he refused to sign up the Chickling Direct the way we had it, so we lost the shop. And you should have heard, and to this day, that's the one shop that hurts me a lot. And by the way, that's the, well, I didn't tell you that story, was when the man ran me over with the car.
Oh, no, I had a note to ask you about that.
Well, this was almost one of the last things that happened to me, but there's so many other things that happened before. You want me to tell you about it now?
Well, why don't you tell me that now, and then we'll go back.
Okay. We had this chick, I had tried to organize chick lingerie in the early 30s, when Rose DeSoto was here, and Feinberg was here. So I was new in the union, and we were giving out leaflets. And then also I was going to work in the shops, and we were having an election, you know, for presidential election, and they were all for Roosevelt. And I had never worked in a lingerie shop. So I went to work there, and God knows I was getting maybe 40, 50 cents an hour for that. And the union would give me maybe $10 or 15 extra. So I was I working already full-time at the union? No, I think I was already a full-time organizer for the union, but I went to work at Chick Lingerie and tried everything I could because the conditions were awful. And the boss gets up one day, and he was amazing. There were two bosses. One is still in the shop, and the other one died. The other one was, was a Mexican or Spanish, but he had a Spanish name, Gonzalez. And he gets up and makes a speech and tells the workers that there's going to be an election, and be sure to vote for the other side. I don't even remember who was running against Roosevelt then.
This would be the early 30s?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. See, I'm starting from the very beginning with the Chick Lingerie. So, of course, people voted the way they wanted. Roosevelt won anyway. So I went and put, I think I told you this story when I put the leaflets in the shop. Well, anyway, we had a strike there, and we lost that strike. Rose DeSoto was very active. She got beat up and everything, and so did I, and vice versa, too, you know. You give and you get. So, I think we went to jail the same day one time. So that I didn't care. I mean, she's going right there with the people. And, you know, that's one of the things that the new leaders don't seem to understand. People don't like to be thought of like they're cattle. If I can do it, why can't you do it, you know? So they liked her in that respect, because she didn't feel that she was any better than anybody else. And maybe that's where I learned it, or maybe it's natural with me, but I never thought any different than I did the first day I went to the union. I didn't become a big shot because I was a business agent or whatever. I was always the same one. I never changed. And the others, as soon as they get their job, in a few months, they're already sitting at a different table, and they They have to be called Mr. or Miss, or you know, something. So we lost that strike, and then we tried again to organize Chick Cleanser. I don't know why, but we wanted, I especially wanted that shop here, but, and we had another girl working in the shop years later. She also tried to organize. Her name was Hope Mendoza. And later on, by the way, President Johnson appointed her to some kind of a, I think you heard of her, now her name is Hope Schechter.
Hmm.
The union even sent her that's the only woman from California that went to Harvard University for 1 year.
The union?
The union sent her. But she happened to be Liddy's, the old man's son's girlfriend, so she was married, but, and that's a different story anyway. So she went to school over there, and she also just said the same thing. She only hoped that she becomes like me someday, like I used to say about Jenny Matthews. That's all she wanted to be like me. She's pretty smart. I mean, actually, she learned a lot in school, and she became very refined, and now she works for the, she's a, what they call it, there's a type in court, what they call it?
Oh, the court reporter?
Something like that. So she's got a very good job. This came my case. So we tried to organize a second time with Hope and didn't work. So finally, about 6 years ago or seven, we tried to organize Lingerie again, and also they had by this time opened a big shop in Redondo Beach.
And all these years, all these 30 years, it was the same owner?
The same owner, except Gonzalez had died, so the same, the other one is still there. And we tried to organize our shops. We had all kinds of organizers and everything in the world we did to organize our shop.
Well, you were never able to get enough of the women to sign up?
We did. We got the biggest majority in both shops, the Redondo Beach and Los Angeles. And I was the happiest person in this world. But I don't know, they went and they brought a bunch of people from Mexico. And they fixed it. We never could find out how, but they fixed like they had been on the payroll before we asked for an election. So when election time came, one time we lost by 21 votes or something. Then another time we had another election and we won the election. But we were arguing about conditions and things, and the other thing wanted the union, this wanted the union. It was a really bad strike, a really nasty strike.
In what way?
Fights and everything. People get arrested, and I was going to, the funniest thing, I was the one I should have more than anybody else, but somehow I was lucky because in Los Angeles, I was in Redondo Beach, and the ones in Los Angeles, every time the organizers went there, they got arrested.